opening of last week's episode,
you
put down a tantalizing question.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Would you end up in next door's pool during the heat wave?
Oh, I thought it was going to be the one about would I podcast with my top off?
I think we actually edited that bit out. So that's...
Oh, okay, so that's not going to mean anything.
But you are fully clothed, just for the record.
It's too triggering. Too triggering. I had to, had to go.
That's Patreon only.
Yeah. So the heatwave has been and gone. So what happened, Henry? Did you swan dive?
No, I didn't. I didn't in the end. You know what? I could actually. I could get out of my window. I could walk along a little bit of ledge on top of a wall, which I've seen downstairs his cat do quite a few times. Mm-hmm. I could shimmy on up. I could actually jump into their pool. But it would feel... Definitely feel like a fool's errand. No, we didn't take them up on it, which potentially is a little bit awkward. But I think we're going to solve this one the British way.
I think they're thrilled, aren't they? I think they've come out of it smelling of roses because they've given you an offer that they didn't want you to take up.
That's true. I mean, they've come out of it smelling of whatever you smell like when you come out of that fetid hot mug of
fetid
petri dish of. Yeah. That bacterial casserole. Yeah. They've got bubbling away.
The undercrotch of a Tasmanian devil.
Yeah, if you're lucky. Yes, I suppose, and it has worked out. Well, it's worked out the British way, which is we're not going to ever mention it again. Mm-hmm. They're never going to mention it again.
Yeah.
But no, you're right. They've made the offer. We didn't accept it. We didn't even... No, I said thanks for the offer. I'll think about it. And I suppose technically I'm still thinking about it and we'll carry on thinking about it until...
Until the sun swallows the earth.
Yeah, exactly. Although just before that happens, I'll probably think, fuck, I really, really would rather be in that mug right now.
Mike, how did you weather the extreme heat? Just with a stiff upper lip?
Stiff upper lip, total inactivity.
Yeah.
And straw trilby.
I also had a straw trilby.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. I think I had a straw trilby. I pulled out my straw. You know how it is? I pulled out my straw trilby that I haven't used for several years. Mm. could barely get into it.
Well, so that's your 40s for you, isn't it, right there?
That's your bloody 40s. Yeah, I mean...
You have to loosen the strap.
I better sort of push and pull it up and down to try and kind of get it on.
Yeah.
Well, did you soak it in orange juice first?
I forgot to soak it in orange juice.
That can loosen the weft of the straw.
I've Googled it since, obviously, yeah. Also, I kind of, the inner lining of it got sort of prolapsed out, if you know what I mean. Mm. So the inner lining was sitting down over my forehead.
Oh, yeah.
While the hat was on high. Yeah, I don't know what's happened. My head does seem to have got bigger over the last couple of years. Like my upper head, from the eyes up, just that section. Because that isn't the section which traditionally you put weight on, I don't think, is it? Foreheads.
No, you're unusual in that regard. And it's something Ben and I have often talked about behind your back. But
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I mean, it's known that I've got a long head. I mean, have we discussed this before?
Long head and a flabby brow.
Those often go hand in hand. I've got a long head. So what that means is when I'm looking at you from the front, things seem roughly in order. Mm. But if I was talking to you and then something happened on my left and I then went into profile, what you'll see is... And thank you for you're concealing your gasps, which I appreciate.
Yeah.
Well, we've seen this before.
Well, this is why there are such strict gun laws in this country, because if we were armed, we'd have shot you down on
exactly.
sight.
Yeah, just on instinct.
Yeah.
And you'd have a hell of a target to aim at as well. Because when I turn to look at the left, the distance from nose to, what do you call the back of the skull?
The bit you're pointing out is your occiput.
You what? So the
That's his occiput.
Is that a mystical land where Gulliver went?
Yeah. Did you not know that?
Occiput?
Yeah. Where all the occiputians live. Have you not wondered why it's so itchy on the back of your head sometimes?
It's a little occiputian.
You've got a small city there, Henry.
Oh, shit. So from front of nose to rear of occiput, I'm unusually long. Mm-hmm. So, for example, picture the famous alien from the Ridley Scott film Alien.
Or
any of the sequels. It's that long... Front rear of head.
See, I was more picturing the Mekon from
yes,
Dan
that's
Dare.
Another one. It's another good sci-fi reference.
And I'm not going to say horse, but...
Shaved horse.
Horse. Shaved horse.
Horse's head, you mean, or whole horse?
Just head.
Horse's head. Yeah, so front... Or it's a bit like the shape of a tic-tac, massive fleshy tic-tac.
Mm. A bit like the art for this podcast, the kind of bean version of your head.
Oh, exactly.
It's basically just an exact copy of your head.
Self-portrait.
Exactly. It was a self-portrait. So, yeah, that might count for why I had to stretch that hat a lot. So, yeah, but anyway, so you're talking about the how we all dealt with the weather.
What was your process, Ben? Solero based?
I had a couple of Soleros, of course. I went to a pool, which was a really good idea. I went to Pontypridd Lido, which I've been going to quite a lot recently to...
I love a Lido.
Just maintain my figure, really. My, you know...
to keep it exactly where it is. Yeah, just to... Because you don't want to change. You don't want this to change.
Yeah, just podgy with thin arms. That's what I'm after.
Yeah. Well, you don't.
Podgy with thin arms, yeah.
You don't want to lose your sponsorship deals, do you?
No, with the avocado people.
You want to... essentially, you want to look like a big lump of ice cream with two toothpicks sticking out.
Yeah, yeah. Or E.T.
E.T. after a binge.
Yeah. A kind of puffy, slightly puffy, hungover E.T.
Yeah, or a bit like, you know, like an old 1950s television.
Yeah. With the two little aerials sticking at the top.
Exactly. That should be... the aerial... The arrows are your arms if you were waving.
Also, a boxy wooden body.
Has to be physically plugged into a wall to work.
Yeah, to operate.
And delivering news about the Suez Crisis.
But with that nice old world feeling about it, quite soft, not like this new technology that's all white and clean edges, like big
walnut.
Boxy.
Yeah, and he crackles if you go too near him. If you touch him on his face, he crackles.
Throwing out radiation. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. So I've been going quite a lot recently to Pontypridd Lido, one of the best places in the world. And I normally swim in the slow lane because I like to take it easy.
We don't want that body changing too. Exactly. You want to keep it.
Well, exactly. Yeah. And also, you know, I'm no Michael Phelps and I wish that rumour would go away.
I'm pleased to hear this, Ben. I'm a big admirer of people who stick to lane etiquette.
Well, this is what I'm going to tell you about. So normally I'm in the slow lane.
Yeah.
It's me and like some old ladies.
So you and the purple rinse gang.
Yeah.
And you've got an arm movement now, isn't it? Which is for the old ladies, the equivalent of what certain road users use, which is you can overtake, you put your arm and you just go overtake like that, overtake.
I to let them go by.
Yeah, to let them go by. You just go, yeah, you're right. Go for it. On you go, love. Yep. On you go. Yeah, I've got some problems. I can't get it out of third for some reason. I need to get it looked at.
So anyway, normally it's fine, but these old women were like very slow.
Okay.
And I sort of sped up behind them, and I was like, I'm really working these old ladies. Right, I was getting them. Yeah. I was like a pacemaker from behind. I was chasing them. It was like they're being chased by a shark.
They were your water huskies.
Exactly.
Were you in their slipstream, actually? They're probably benefiting from that.
Oh, yeah.
It's an old trick, actually, isn't it? You can basically just sort of lie down and be pulled along by old ladies swimming.
And then slingshot yourself to the far end.
Yeah. And I was thinking to myself, I'm doing them a bit of a service here. I'm, you know, they've come just... I'm working these ladies.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Their cardiovascular health is going to be excellent after this.
Yeah.
I did a couple of laps and, it was quite good fun. And then... one of the old women, we got to the end, one of the old women turned round and looked at me with like fear, a mixture of fear, exhaustion, awe, maybe.
Yeah.
And just said, you need to go in the medium lane.
Oh, wow.
What a moment.
That's so, it's so rare that anyone tells anyone else to get in a different lane, even when it's clear as day that that should happen.
Yeah.
You must have worked so hard.
We got through rationing. but this is like nothing we've ever faced. You have to go in the medium lane.
The miner strikes were nothing. They were nothing. Yeah. They were gone from a memory. Yeah.
We've seen whole communities destroyed by Thatcher, and we never told her to go in the medium lane.
Oh, Ben.
Yeah. And then I moved up and got absolutely beasted them because the pace was much too great in the medium lane.
Okay. So you're sort of between lanes, really. You don't really have a lane that's quite right.
I think they were too slow even to be in the lane bit. They should have been in the kids bit, just floating.
So were you aware of the fact that they were really like,
yeah, but I thought they were enjoying it. I thought they were like, I thought I was basically a personal trainer.
You thought you were like a personal trainer, right, and motivating them.
Yeah.
Well, that's a lot of sort of a lot of the most despotic world leaders have in the past also tricked themselves into believing that they're doing this for some sort of greater good.
Yeah.
You can fool yourself.
Hi, I'm Benjamin.
Benjamin's back.
Okay, this week's theme, as sent in by Maddie in the USA.
Thank you, Maddie.
Mm-hmm.
Is swords.
Swords. I was in somewhere quite recently. I went to Toledo in Spain for a wedding.
Ah. An
old school friend of mine. He moved to Spain, fell in love with a Spaniard, and has never looked back.
Good man.
But the wedding was in Toledo. Have you ever been there?
Where is it? I don't think so.
It's just a bit about like an hour's drive south of Madrid.
No, definitely not.
Quite a very old city. It might have even been the capital once. But it's one of these places where you go and literally every other shop in the city sells swords.
I've never been to any place like that.
It's extraordinary.
Wow.
No exaggeration. A huge, and they're very into their Damascene steel. I mean, if you want to pick up like a 9-foot broadsword, it's a piece of piss in Toledo.
What's Damascene steel?
As
from
in,
Damascus?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Wow, that's, God.
At least that's what they claim. They're into it big time. There's lots of crusader-based impulse purchases and, you know, curios and souvenirs as well. They're really
next to the till in the supermarket.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
Curved sword.
You can get a scimitar. Yeah.
Yeah.
And a crusader helmet keyring.
And a walking map to the Holy Land.
Exactly.
So why? So that you can display it in your home? Is that a thing?
I assume so. I didn't see any signs up about broadsword fighting clubs or anything like that. I don't think my Spanish would be up to that anyway, to be fair. Maybe that's a thing. I didn't see any live sword fights. I didn't see anyone selling scabbards either. That's a thing. There were certainly wall mountings for sale, but no scabbards, and I didn't see anyone wearing a sword.
Okay. So are these the equivalent of live? Are they loaded in a way? Do you know what I mean? Are they
blunted?
They were selling them as the real deal. Yeah, so they weren't like kind of plastic swords, and they were full blown, yeah. You know, big old metal sharp things that you could.
And did you hold one and wield it a bit and
I
get some selfies?
No, I don't.
No, okay.
I didn't fancy it much.
And I assume in Toledo that the context these swords are mainly used in is skewering huge hams.
I would hope so.
And then presenting them at a feast.
Because they did have, it was a city also, yeah. Beautiful hams, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course.
And I think I sent you a picture while I was there of a mega ham outside.
You did?
One shot.
Yeah, that was extraordinary.
I was worried it wasn't real because it was taller than me, and so I didn't touch it just in case it wasn't, because I wanted to believe in that ham. I wanted to believe that somewhere in Central
Spain there was
Spain,
a pig with a leg as big as a man.
They're rearing those pigs.
Yeah.
So I didn't. I didn't buy you presents. I should have got you both a little sword, sort of bean sword or something,
or a big sword.
Yeah.
Or just any sort of ham, Mike.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I
mean, come on, mate. Because it is one of the great ham cultures, isn't it?
It's true. I just bought a straw trilby
full of ham.
Of course, it comes full of ham. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everything is. They use ham there for everything. Like, for example, if you buy a rucksack there, instead of stuffing it with newspaper, it'll just be stuffed with ham, you know, to keep it in shape.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so that you already have a ham in that you were going to carry in the first place.
Exactly.
You're ready to go.
So you're ready to go. So it comes with what you'd put in anyway. So you can say to them, so do you mind if I'm just trying out this rucksack? Do you mind if I remove the display ham that you've got and to stuff it in and put the actual ham that I'd be carrying around, which I've got in my current rucksack?
My family ham. Yeah.
My ancestral ham. which obviously, you know.
My ham dowry.
Yeah. Because I'm going to christening this weekend and my current rucksack is looking a bit frayed around the edges. And I need a smart rucksack for
exactly.
It.
And of course, we're going to wet the baby's head with ham.
Yeah. And obviously, in those Latinate cultures, you're always going to christening on the weekend. So normally you'd point out if you're not going to christening on the weekend, but it's assumed that you're going to christening on the weekend. So it's assumed that you'll need the ham.
It's de rigueur, isn't it?
It is de rigueur. And obviously, the baby will be wearing a lovely little ham blouse.
And they don't cry, do they? They don't. They laugh as they're dipped into the ham font.
Yeah. They do. Yeah.
Well, they laugh and chomp.
They laugh and chomp. And it's very moving.
Yeah. But I think I wonder if the great ham cultures, because there's three great. You think about it, three great ham cultures of the world: Spain, Italy, and the north of England.
Right. Apologies to any Deutsch hamists out there who might have thought they were in the top three, but that's often the way, isn't it?
Or any Wiltshire ham farmers in this country.
For the Germans, I would say middle and Eastern European hams are more of a... It's a grey area. We've discussed this on the podcast before. Mm. To what extent is it...
Well, it's a sausage world. It's a sliced sausage.
It's a huge sausage, or a very big sausage. It's been sliced very thinly. Does that make it a ham? Is that for debate? Do you know what I mean? Whereas if you take the maximum version of a British ham is a pig leg, isn't it? You expand, you know.
Well, no, I think in Spain it's a pig leg. If you expand a British ham, that meat has been mechanically sort of retrieved from
a ham factory.
From the
ham
floor.
It's a floor of
sort of discarded pubes.
Yeah.
Bits of packed lunch from the factory workers.
It's an old man sandblasting meat off a spine.
Yeah,
that's what British ham is,
filled out with a little bit of Lido water, coughed up by an old lady who's exhausted from being overworked by Benjamin Partridge.
I did collect it.
So is it pressure hosed off a pig's spine?
Yeah,
it's pressure hosed. Yeah, it's all pressure hosing. Okay, yeah. Whereas an Italian or a Spanish ham, expand it out, you've got a pig leg.
Yeah, it's done with consent. The pig's in on it. The pig's often suggested it.
Well, it is the pig's destiny. It's the greatest destiny it can achieve.
Yeah. Hmm. The most respected pig is a one-legged pig, or even a no-legged pig.
Exactly.
The breathing sausage.
What a German would call a sausage with a face, exactly. And that's why, obviously, the Spanish and Italian versions of Peppa Pig, all those episodes end differently, which is...
Well, they're very disturbing for British children to watch, but yeah.
So be careful. We can't. If you're on holiday in Spain, stick to the British...
Hola, señor pig.
Adios, señor jambo.
Wow.
Daddy. Why are they force-feeding Pepper all those acorns?
So, yeah, we can't stress this enough. If you're going on holiday to Spain or Italy, take the DVDs with you. Better still, just stick to watching BBC News. Don't get on those. Don't be watching the local...
Don't leave your hotel.
You can avoid it. Don't leave the hotel, because this extends to all the Peppa Pig merchandise. It'll be on the Spanish balloons. There'll be leg-shaped balloons. There'll be Peppa Pig's leg-shaped
balloons.
There'll
be a Peppa Pig parade down the high street, probably. With its gruesome end at the City Hall.
People being chased down the street by legless pigs.
Well, and you don't want to have this conversation. You don't have this conversation with your child, which is, where's the Peppa Pig float? The thing is, I'm afraid... Darling, is it a Pepper is actually on 7 floats?
And you're eating one of them?
Yeah, just be warned. But to bring us back to swords, I'm just wondering if it's true that the three great ham cultures are also the three great sword cultures.
And okay. If there's a... No, this is good.
This is PhD level stuff, Henry.
Because, obviously...
How long have you been working on this? Have you been working on it for as long as we suspect you've been working on it?
You know what? Almost bang on the same amount of time you're expecting.
Go on.
But what I was wondering is, because obviously Spain, as we know from what Mike's been saying, is a sword culture. Yeah. It's got a town where every other shop is a sword shop. Mm-hmm.
Right, so. Antonio Banderas is a sword guy.
Yeah. Is he a sword guy?
Well, Zorro.
He knows one end of a sword from the other, for sure.
Yeah.
Zorro.
Is Zorro Spanish?
I think he's Hispanic.
Okay.
But of the Americas, isn't he?
Oh, okay. I don't know.
Oh, is he? Oh, is he Central America? Is he? No, he's not Central American.
Zorro is set in Los Angeles.
Is it?
According to Wikipedia.
I thought it was like in the kind of Three Musketeers universe.
I always assumed it was kind of cowboy world.
Oh, yeah, I've got that totally wrong. It says more like...
Sort of sword versus pistol.
Okay.
Hang on, I've looked it up. It is set in Pueblo de Los Angeles, which is what was in Los Angeles before they, you know... Did the cinemas and all that.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he's Spanish.
There we go. Thank you, Ben. That saved us a bollocking or two, didn't it?
Yeah. That's good. That's more evidence that it's a sword culture. Italy is definitely a sword culture because of the Romans. Picture a Roman soldier. What's the first thing you picture? Helmet, small dress, leather jerkin, breastplate. But then sword, trusty sword. You know, they quite short one. Swords. Yeah. Quite short, stubby little.
Mm-hmm.
It's a sword with no honour, isn't it? It's a quick hard stab. Hard stab, dead, move on. The Roman army were absolutely brutal.
It's a thrusting bastard sword.
It's a thrusting bastard. It's not about honour. This was forged by my great, great, great grandfather in the 7th. The Romans already cut your head off.
It's disposable. Don't care. Throw away, get a new
don't
one.
Don't care who forged it, mate. We're stabbing you. We're taking you down. Give a shit. Honestly, it's not an issue for us.
We're taking your hand backpack and moving on.
Putting on the straps, they're adjustable, yeah. Seems to be nice. On we go. And then obviously in the north of England, you've got...
These are the swords of my people.
The Sean Bean swords.
We've got the Sean Bean swords,
exactly. White rose, the red rose.
Exactly.
We've also got Sword in the Stone and all that. That's all Britain, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Is it?
Yeah.
Camelot?
Yeah. We've got in trouble about this before, though, haven't we?
We have.
The location of Camelot.
So what is the link between the swords and the hams there?
Good point. So were they initially forged to cut ham, essentially?
Ah. I think that's what we're looking at, isn't it?
All the hams harvested to feed the swordsmiths.
To feed the hungry swordsmiths.
Which way around did it go?
And maybe they needed a snack they could eat while testing a sword.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got either a human arm, or that's not ideal. So test it out on cutting a pig's leg off. This pig's leg is roughly the same texture and consistency as a human leg, so I've tested out whether I can kill a human and hang that up to dry for 2.5 months. I got myself a ham.
I think, Henry, you might have left out a sword culture because...
I know. This is a big one. Japan.
Oh, I was going to say another one, but yes, Japan.
There's a lot of sword cultures left out here.
Well, I always think when people have sword fights, they say, en garde. Which, of course, is French.
It's also not a bad ham culture, is it?
I don't...
No, it's not really.
I don't know if it's...
Because you think Serrano ham, you think Parma ham, and you think Yorkshire ham, don't you?
I think wafer-thin Iceland packeted ham.
Wafer-thin Iceland packeted ham.
Yeah, you don't have, like, Wren ham or...
Yeah, you don't have Grenoble ham.
So en garde, that's quite fancy, isn't it?
Fencing.
I've never been fencing. I think it would suit me.
It would suit you.
Oh, that's a big call, Mike.
I've often thought of a fencing club open just around the corner. I'd be there like a shot.
Oh, you would. I tell you what's good about fencing as a hobby is, or at least it's very good in, you know, quite often in like films and dramas and stuff.
Yeah.
Especially regional detective kind of stuff, I'd say. A lot of the time, the detective is just having to go around and talk to a bunch of people and interview them about the case, and it's quite boring setup. So what they like to do is have someone finish doing something.
Oh, and just take off the helmet. Oh,
yes. Exactly. Yes, at the beginning of a scene. And I think fencing is a really good one. Because like, yeah, we need to go and speak to Albert, the accountant, to work out financially how could the murderer have, you know, could he have financed this crime legally? You know, it's quite...
They've been able to tidy up the dialogue later on. Yeah, there's a placeholder. Yeah, sure. Yeah.
But what's his VAT track? Because as we know, most criminals get caught because of VAT. I mean, we know that. Yeah. It happened to what's he called? The famous
Bone.
Al Capone and all the others. Probably, you know, they mostly get done on tax. It's quite boring, but it's how most criminals get done. That's hard to dramatise.
Yeah, that's why they never caught Jack the Ripper, because VAT hadn't been invented.
Exactly.
Yeah. The two ways of catching the criminal are VAT fraud, or you mic them up as part of a documentary. They go into the toilet and go, "You killed them all, rabbit."
Yeah. And the second, they very rarely pull that off, because the mics are expensive, and so you want to take the mic back off them. You don't want to lose the mic. You know?
Yeah. 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 And I, for one, have never verbally confessed to any of my own crimes while in the toilet, because I've got bigger fish to fry. Do you know what I mean? I don't find it a time to reflect over my past and to sort of...
Yeah, you've got to finish that Sudoku.
I've got a Sudoku to do, man.
There's a Bond film, isn't there, Madonna fences with Bond?
There's a Bond
They're usually
one.
In a sort of needlessly wood-panelled room. Well, it's never down the local leisure centre, right?
No.
It hasn't been that they've just taken down the badminton nets, you know, so the fencing club can use the space for an hour. Yeah.
No. There's like deer heads on the wall and kind of ancient Japanese friezes. Yeah.
The other thing is it's shorthand. In fact, it goes for a certain type of character, doesn't it? It's shorthand for, again, in detective dramas, you've only really got a handful of different types of person.
Yeah. Guilty looking vicar.
Yeah.
Gifting victory. Crusty colonel.
Yeah.
Sociopathic, enormously rich local entrepreneur bastard.
Yeah.
Drop top car.
Really fey sculptress who wears very, very floaty clothes and is surrounded by sort of bits of half finished sculpture and stuff. Yeah.
Embittered academic.
Oh, yeah. That's a good one.
Mm.
And increasingly, hovering Japanese pony.
Hovering Japanese pony.
Yeah, which is something that, a lot of the streamers are now bringing in for the younger audience.
Yeah.
and often it's a bit jarring, that scene.
The live Japanese pinata.
Yeah, it used to be there'd just be a full-lipped, beautiful young mechanic, but it's, right, he's got rid of, and now it's the floating horse. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But the local aristocrat, essentially, that is another of them.
Yeah.
Excellent. So what you want is a quick thing to establish all these people. So, for example, the crusty colonel, he will be...
drunk. Shooting, I think. What do they call it? Pigeon shooting, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
He'll be shooting into a hay bale in his study.
Yeah.
Potentially, just to show...
Drinking out of a handmade wooden globe.
Yeah. Possibly polishing an old tank in his front garden.
He'll have a Batman, but not in the usual sense.
What do you mean by that?
Well, like I said, a sort of general factotum, valet... Time.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
yeah.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
And the eccentric artist will be sort of putting their finishing touches to it. Because what you need is that last action to open the scene.
Mm-hmm. The floating horse will be powering up, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The floating horse will be sort of pulsating as it charges.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. We go, wow, wow, wow. And occasionally doing a little giggle. So I go, wow, wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
And as it does a little giggle, little rainbows will come out of its mouth and disappear. And
then it descends to talk to the detective and puts on a robe or just has a little towel around its neck.
Yeah exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Which looks delightful, to be fair. The frustrated novelist will be clickety-clacketing away on an old-fashioned typewriter.
Yeah.
And will probably do something like tear off a page, scrumple it up, and chuck it in a bin and go, "Oh, this latest novel is absolute murder to write." That kind of thing. Yeah, yeah. That sort of thing.
But I've been working at it for weeks. I just can't get a good stab at it.
Would you wait a moment? I've got a call from my publishers. Red Herring Papers.
Also, quite a good one is... Someone, if anyone who's got a sort of mechanical job will be sort of wiping themselves down and wiping oil off their arms.
Yeah.
Mm.
Quite often they'll pop out. This is why this is an image we've all seen thousands of times. We don't really know why. It's someone popping out from under a car.
Yeah.
On a skateboard.
On a skateboard. Those are not used. I've been to garages.
You've never tripped up on a skateboard that was lying loose on the floor of Quick Fit.
Exactly. What happens is they hoist the car up, and if anything, it's the opposite. I went to, because I was in Halfords recently.
Hang on, what's the opposite of coming out from the bottom of a car on a skateboard?
They get on top of it. They hoist it up and then they get on top to try and jump over it.
On skis.
You've got a little trampoline.
They ski out of the sunroof up. The car is flipped on its back. like
a tortoise.
Like a tortoise or a wriggling beetle.
Yeah,
with
otherwise
no
it might run away. Yeah. It's the only way to truly disable a car.
Otherwise it'll
handbrake is not enough.
Its natural instincts will make it drive off. So that was invented. That whole thing was invented to start scenes. It's difficult to start a scene, especially in a regional detective drama. They're inherently boring. It's VAT crime. It's going talking to one person after another. Very, very boring. You need to get those scenes off. How do you start a scene with a mechanic? Get them on a skateboard. It's a crazy idea. Why the fuck not? Just dolly him out from under the car. And it's basic human psychology. It's the first game we all play, which is, can you see someone's face? No, I can't. Yes, I can. Ha, ha, ha. That's hilarious. It's the basis of all culture, probably. Because I've met a lot of babies in my life. They all love it. You hide your face and you pop your face out.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening with the mechanic. He pops his face out.
He plays Peepo, he makes the detective laugh. Detective relaxes, crosses him off the list. Yeah.
Yeah. pretty soon he's feeding the detective using the airplane system, isn't he? Mashed banana. Yeah. And it's only on his way home in the car the detective thinks, I've been
Wait
played.
Wait a minute.
Wait a minute. I've got a big yellow bow on my forehead. I've been played. So fencing works really well for this, again, because it's got the people element, isn't it? Which is you take the mask off. Great start to a scene. Conceal the face, see the face.
It's high, quite high status for your high status bastard character.
High status bastard. You've got him in a nice outfit. Mike's going to look bloody great in that.
Yeah.
Mike can do a great thing, which is when he takes his head out of a helmet or anything, he does this thing where he shakes his moustache around.
Yeah.
And it's a nice opportunity to use slow-mo, potentially, because the moustache, it's a bit like a sea anemone, isn't it? It kind of waves around.
It catches
in the air.
Yeah.
Catches the light.
Beads of sweat fly off it.
Beads of sweat as he shakes his head left and right like a dog. Like a dog in a, from, it's just been in a pond, isn't it?
It's like a wet dog's ass. Yeah.
It's like a wet dog's ass. You've got... just flex all over the place. And then what's good is the scene can start. Another thing that's quite good is the scene can start with some other people in the background still fencing sometimes. So as you're talking in the background.
If you've got the background artist budget. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And usually people who have never been anywhere near a fencing club in their lives.
Yeah, well, exactly. So it's extras. And often it'll be children because, as we've discussed before, perspective-wise, it'll generally be small people, like in Casablanca, isn't it?
So it looks like it's a bigger room than it is.
Exactly. Like in that final... That's true, actually, the final scene in Casablanca. You know when they're on the airport strip?
Here we go.
Right.
Yeah. When they're on the airstrip in Casablanca with a hill.
You can almost hear the bollocking jingle in my head as you're saying it. Yeah.
But the... You know the Hill of Beans, the famous speech at the end?
Yeah.
Listen, bollocking.
Don't lose confidence, Henry.
And Humphrey Bogart basically says, look, he says it's more important that you and Victor Laszlo, you help him with his work to defeat the Nazis and leave me in Rick's bar.
I'm going to eat this hill of beans. Is that what he says?
I've just ordered a hill of beans. it's a sharing. I thought you were sticking around, but don't worry about it.
It's a sharing platter, but I reckon I can do it.
Sam will finish his set soon in a minute. Equalize a hill of beans as well. We'll tuck in. Don't worry about it.
And also it's because it's a hill of beans. It's got big surface area. It's getting cold quite fast. So if you could just...
Let's wrap it up.
If we could wrap this up, because I should have ordered a bowl of beans. It would have been much cleverer.
I asked them to put the melted cheese on it. Yeah. And that's not going to be very nice when it gets really cold. So
it looks like a snowy mountain cat.
Exactly.
That's how I like to eat it.
And I'm only in the foothills at this. I've only had a couple so far.
And peaking seems like an absolute distant prospect at this point. But I do want to peak before bedtime, if at all possible. A summit, is it? I want a summit.
Yes, I think summit is the verb.
The point is that in that scene...
There was a baby dressed up as an aeroplane in the background.
They couldn't have bought an actual aeroplane.
Painted a baby grey.
They painted a baby grey. No, there's two mechanics working on the plane, and apparently they are, I think, children or very, very short people. So they use that for the perspective. Sorry, I'm really sorry. I've gone off on one, but the point is for fencing and swords that they're quite good in that respect, aren't they?
we don't remember what respect that was, but I'm happy to agree.
I've got a friend who does fencing.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
I've looked it up. Which time does she do?
Which time?
Type. There's three
swords type.
Yeah.
How is that?
I looked it up once.
Okay.
It must have been during an Olympics because I definitely got into watching it a bit.
Can I say, Mike, before you, they've got to have like, I bet they've got names like, you can either choose Radicchio.
Is one called an Epinade? Is that a thing?
Epinade?
It's either
Radicchio.
Or Epinade sounds right.
Is it, I can know because it's the
foil,
it's,
maybe? Might be one. No, but Sabre is definitely one of them.
Okay. I was thinking it's the sword cultures.
I see.
Epinade. Radicchio or clogger.
That's just actually that's a wooden clog on a string, but surprisingly effective against
lethal in the right hand.
And I would watch that. It's impossibly it's quite engaging, but also almost impossible to watch the Olympic stuff because it's so fast. These little bouts, they last about a nanosecond.
Oh, do they?
And there'll be sort of 5,000 movements that have happened in that time. And they have to slow it down so you can actually see what's happened.
So was fencing based on, like, was that ever an actual sort of, genuine
Yeah, it's based on duels.
Yeah,
So it's duels. It's not. It wouldn't be used in warfare. It's for kind of you know.
No, it's for like your
noble honor fighting.
Yeah. And those happened, like real ones happened into the modern era. So there's, I'm going to be bollocked for this, but I think there's either a video, potentially on YouTube, or certainly photographs of two gentlemen having a duel. Oh, yeah, wow. And that must be in, what, the late 1800s or early 1900s?
Yeah, video seems like a stretch, but yeah, could be.
Yeah, it's 3D. It's 3D video.
So it's camcorder.
4K video.
Yeah, that might have been a film.
But yeah, like it was a big part of like actual culture. It's kind of mad when you think about it. And like pistol dueling then also took over a bit. But
would that be to the death?
Yeah.
My understanding was that was the inherent risk. But I think if you did a sword fighting duel and you managed to sort of poke someone, give them a bit of a stab, then usually they'd yield at that point and they'd have lost.
Okay.
And they'd have hoped to goodness that their surgeon wasn't total shite and also didn't have his hands covered in deadly germs. And he was shite, and he did.
So you were
going to die anyway.
You were going to die just quite a lot slower.
Yeah.
There was a really cool duel that I think, I might be bollocked again. I think it happened in France.
Yeah,
where there were two men suspended beneath balloons.
Oh, yes. Wow.
And they each had a gun, and then it was the first person to shoot the other's balloon, and they would fall to their death.
It's great, isn't it? Do they manage it?
I don't know, because you'd think they'd both die, right? Because it's quite a big target, so you'd both just hit the balloon, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, also, if I'm going down, I'm going to die anyway. I'm going to be like, forget the rules. You're coming down with me, mate. I don't care. At this point, who cares? So you're coming down.
The thing that I found surprising about swords is I learned about how, I think for a lot of them, the way that they would kill you is just blunt force.
Right.
So it's not so much about like cutting you or like slicing it. It's literally just smacking you in the head.
I think you'd actually use the flat. So I can imagine British swords, rather than that kind of refined, elegant sort of epinard. What's it called? Epée.
Maybe it's an épée. Is it just épée? That's it.
Whereas I can imagine the British sort of broadsword, where you'd actually use the flat panel. You'd just smack someone.
It's good for pancakes as well.
In fact, you could administer a kind of slapping as well. You could use it side on for a kind of pull yourself together, man.
You'd have to be very careful, very confident about that, though, wouldn't you?
If
you're just trying to admonish a colleague or something like that.
I suspect that's how the broadsword was invented, which is a way of keeping the troops focused. So if someone wasn't focused, you'd pull out your broadsword, get it flat side on, obviously, slap. You'd have to make sure the person was standing exactly the right distance away, Mike, as you say. Slap them around the face and say, pull yourself together, man, and keep lobbing pebbles at the enemy.
Hot pebbles, mind you.
Nice and hot.
Do you think we're going to defeat this army? If we're not focused on chucking pebbles? Yes, you have to chuck them fast because they're hot, they hurt the hands. That's the whole bloody point. You chuck them fast. You pick them up, it scalds you, you chuck them, and then a nurse tends to your scalded hand.
Then you do the next one.
Don't make me use this broadsword to slap you. I will slap you again. I'm sorry, I've taken his head off. Look, sorry. Sorry, guys.
We need a new pebble chucker, please. I've just decapitated this pebble chucker.
Head off.
We've got a pile of hot pebbles here. That's not going anywhere.
It's cooling down.
You, Gavin of Kettering, get here now.
Yeah, it really is. I've actually killed 50 of our own men trying to get them focused on the pebble job, and we've only killed 3 of those guys with hot pebbles. I mean,
and that took 4,000 pebbles.
4,000 pebbles.
We are running out of pebbles.
I tell you what, if I'm learning anything from this, it's that we've got to train these kids in pebble use younger, grassroots. Get them out in the pebble fields. Get them out on the beaches of the South Coast. Get them playing with pebbles. Get them used to pebbles from a younger age.
They start chucking them young, and soon enough they'll be able to hit France from Kent.
That's the dream.
And the pebbles are simply not hot enough.
And believe you me, I've had a chat with the pebble heaters. I've accidentally killed 54 of them this morning. I thought I'd give them a motivational slapping this morning. I killed almost all of them.
There's only 2 left.
I think that might be how it all started.
I think so, yeah.
Okay, here's a question. When does something stop being a dagger and start being a sword?
What about when does it stop being a dagger and start being a sort of cheese knife?
Ooh. When does it stop being a cheese knife and become a chiropodist's scalpel? Which some would say is the same thing. Don't worry. No, I'll tell you what.
And next up, the archers.
Yeah, we laugh, but I am currently in regular contact with a chiropodist. I'm in the chiropody system right now.
Oh, here we go. Henry's showing us his feet over the Zoom.
Oh, no one needed that.
They're quite grey and dark.
I sent my chiropodist a photo of my cracked heel this morning.
Mm-hmm. And they resigned from the profession.
You know what? Sometimes it's just that one thing which pushes you over. You know what? I'm going to go to South America and I'm going to learn how to make carpets. What I said I wanted to do as a kid. And you know what? If I'm looking at this heel right now.
Mum and dad are dead now, so I can't disappoint them with that dream anymore. This has just tipped me over.
I'm sorry, darling, but look, the fact is, we've got a steady job here. The kids are here. What's that you're showing me the photo? Okay, so I think we start in Buenos Aires and we go to some sort of carpet college there.
There's an academy I've been Googling every day for years.
But Mum, I'm halfway through my A-level course. I don't want to decamp at this point. What's that you're showing me your phone again? I want to learn how to train South American ponies to dance. That's what I want an A-level in.
In fact, it was a horrible cracked foot that sent the conquistadors over to South America in the first place, wasn't it?
Just on impulse. They just knew they needed to head west and keep heading west.
Okay, time to read your emails. Thank you to everyone who sent us an email this series. This, of course, is the last of this series, series 5.
Yeah. So if you haven't sent your email and you've got a burning question, you're going to have to sit it out through the summer, I'm afraid.
But do send it in. We will get
round
to it.
But do send it in, because, we'll get round to it in the autumn.
God, the autumn.
The autumn. Russet leaves clogging up our streets.
Tiny apples.
The tiniest of tiny apples rolling around, again clogging up our streets. Just the general sense that things are being clogged.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
My beautiful horse.
Now, this first email is from someone who I think I would call the Austrian Crown Prince of bollocking.
Oh, okay.
Who's this?
It's our old friend Volta.
You know Volta, Henry.
Oh, stop it, Volta.
I can't remember who gave us our first bollocking. I think it might have been, it may have been Volta.
Certainly, I think his was one of the early strongest.
Early
ones.
Landmark bollocking.
He likes to duel with you, Henry. Choose your weapon, sword, pistol, or bollocks.
And you just hope you get that first choice of bollock, because obviously you can get the bigger bollock that everyone has.
Not everyone.
Well, there'll be the felt lined bollock box, yeah, which is what gets opened up on the morning of a bollock duel.
Yeah.
we'll have two bollocks taken from the same anyone who's related to both of the duelies.
Yeah, who's over 50?
Who's over 50? And everyone always one of those bollocks will be slightly bigger.
Mm. Okay.
Yeah. Typically speaking, but of course the big one is more deadly, but the smaller one is more manoeuvrable, isn't it?
More nimble.
Yeah.
If you want to get one straight up a nostril, up into the brain cavity.
Exactly.
Don't be choosing that big bollock.
Choose the David bollock.
Choose the David bollock. But if you're planning to codge that person to death, right, with just repeated blows to the forehead.
It's got
to
be the Goliath bollock every time.
So, Volta or Walter. I guess it's Volta, is it?
Yeah, I would say so.
From Austria. He writes, hi, Beans. Volta from Austria here. Henry, you can please stop trembling now at the mention of that name. On the last episode, when Ben said, nature always finds a balance, we were talking about...
service stations, I think.
Service station toast, which there is on either side of the motorway. You exclaimed, Brownian motion.
So he did.
And I think, you know, me and you, Mike, we reacted as if he would, maybe saying the wrong thing, or grasping for a random scientific phrase.
Yeah.
Well, so it's the correct one, isn't it? Because it's brown.
It's how brown the toast is.
How brown the toast is. defines the degree and the pace of
the toast.
Yeah, of the toast. When it's white toast, you can call it Whiteonian motion.
Right.
If it's seeded Bappian motion, it depends what the bread is.
Sure.
Carry on.
He writes, as someone who used to be pretty well versed in physical chemistry, I find that a very apt analogy.
Okay.
Brownian motion is the random thermal movement of small particles. For example, particles in a cup of coffee would be distributed evenly just by the energy of the hot water. I therefore consider this email not a bollocking, but rather a gentle stroking of the bollocks.
Oh, come on. Never has our bollock metaphor been pushed so far, but so deftly.
I think only Volta could do that.
Only Volta could get away with it. Stop it. It's a delicate waltz, isn't it, that me and Volta dance. We dance a delicate but deadly waltz,
yes,
don't we?
With lots of Viennese horses around you in a circle.
Lots of Viennese horses, and it's all very Prussian. It's very Habsburg,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's two noble, mustachioed, epauletted, shiny buttoned bastards.
Dancing to the death.
Dancing to the death.
He writes, Lord only knows that needs its own jingle. I'm not making a stroking of the bollocks jingle. And from here on in, I just want to say that's not becoming a thing. The gentle stroking of the bollocks is not becoming a feature of this podcast.
No.
I second that veto.
Yeah.
I think we could... We've already got reverse bollock, haven't we? Or anti-bollock.
Reflecto bollock.
It's one of them. Yeah. We've got... haven't we got...
Well, there's false bollock.
Yeah. False bollock. So what could... We call this what, like a...
bollock light.
Or a bollock crowning.
A bollock crowning? No, we're not... No.
That's worse. Yeah. A bollock across the bows.
Okay, guys, we've got to move on from this. Yeah. It's all becoming...
Yes. So thank you for your email, Walter.
Thanks, Walter.
Nobody get ideas about that.
Yeah.
No. We had an email from Ben in Canada.
Ooh.
Canada.
Oh, Canada.
Canada. I'd like two tickets to see Celine Dion at the ice hockey in the Cirque du Soleil.
Canada.
Hey, I'm milking a wolf here.
A slice of old Papa's Nova Scotia rolls down Chrysler's farm in Regina, Saskatchewan.
No one's ever going to be interested in your wide range of amusing facial expressions, Mr. Carey.
Syrup.
Obviously, our last episode is about Canada.
Excellent.
He writes, tremendously exciting to get a whole episode about Canadian stereotypes.
Yeah. That's what it was about.
Just that, examining that the stereotypes. Yeah.
That was what the topic
bursting
was,
the bubbles.
It?
Yeah, changing preconceptions. Sure.
Yeah, he says, also, I think Henry might have genuinely tapped into the proto-Canadian accent.
Mm.
I think that's what you're going for, isn't it?
Yeah. That's right.
He writes some notes. One, most Canadians said he's actually not smug at all. That's just Toronto.
Okay.
Fine, I'll take that.
Yeah.
Two, he finds the lack of wilderness in Britain absolutely adorable. And then he writes, I've heard you guys have a thing called trekking, where instead of hiking outdoorsy types, you just walk between towns and stay at an inn instead of a tent.
I think that's what we call hiking, isn't it? Like you go to one of the areas between two towns.
I was confused by it.
I think the point he's making is that for us, the wilderness is just a sort of...
Is the gap between two pubs, basically.
I think trekking, if you use the word trekking as well here, to me, that in Britain, that just conjures up...
That involves a pony, doesn't it?
Well, for me, no, it conjures up teenagers being forced to go into the Pennines or something for a rainy weekend of camping for their own good with some fruitcake.
By the Duke of Edinburgh.
Exactly.
Yeah, the Duke of Edinburgh Awards. Did either of you do that?
No, of course I did. Look at me.
Oh, of course he did. Gold?
Gold award, buddy.
Oh,
did you get to meet the prince?
I didn't get to. I saw the prince from a very long distance in the back of Buckingham Palace.
All stand for the king!
We're entering the regal zone. Regal zone. Regal zone.
Off with their heads!
On with the show.
Listen not to the whores and the shopkeepers.
Bring me more advisors.
The Regal Zone.
Who gave you the award?
Someone who I have no idea who he was, and to this day have no idea who he was. None of my family knew who he was. He was a celebrity because you got carved out into little groups, little individual groups of sort of a dozen or so. And there were hundreds of groups across the gardens at the back of Buckingham Palace.
So they needed lots of celebs.
They needed absolutely tons of celebs.
So they had to deploy celebs.
Yeah.
Right.
And I mean, I've got absolutely no. I assume he'd done a shampoo commercial or something in the early 80s or something. He fit the criteria. He had a bit of a silky mullet.
Was it Pat Sharp?
Could it have been Pat Sharp?
If it had been Pat Sharp, this wouldn't be the first time you'd have heard about it.
No, that's fair. He writes, point three, castor oil, which is from the anal glands of a beaver.
Okay.
Smells very nice and is used to season leather.
You know how whenever you talk about something in life, then what happens is over the next few days you keep noticing it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's called the Bader-Meinhof effect.
Oh, is it? Well, I had that with beavers.
You saw a lot.
Since last
keep spotting
since last week. No, but they keep coming up online on my phone. This is a new thing that people talk about now. I feel it's new or newish. That whenever that happens, people go, "Oh, they're listening."
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's Google are listening.
Yeah. Oh, this guy wants to buy a beaver.
And what I'm getting is ads for buy your own beaver,
rent a beaver,
build your own beaver,
grow a beaver from a petri dish at home. But do you think that is the bar that?
Bader-Meinhof effect is when it's because it's in your brain, so then your brain's kind of looking out for it.
But that's what I mean. It's because is this phenomenon of people thinking now that when you're online,
I don't know, that
Google are listening, or is it just the Bader-Meinhof effect happening?
I mean, it sounds more like you're being directly marketed beaver.
It sounds more like an algorithm. Maybe it's the Bader-Meinhof unit in the Google algorithm department.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Point four from Ben.
Yeah.
The appendix is not vestigial, as Mike said it was.
Okay, yeah.
He says it stores reserves of gut bacteria in case you get a spot of dysentery and need to recolonize your intestines.
All right, fair play.
What? Is that true?
So instead of having to hit the Yakult, you just give your appendix a squeeze.
So it's an
internal Yakult reservoir.
Yeah.
It's an internal Yakult reservoir.
That's what he's saying.
How extraordinary.
Anyway, thank you, Ben.
Yeah, he's come up with the goods there.
Now, this one, I wasn't sure about reading this one out. Let's see how good a sport Henry is.
Oh fuck! It's not about. I'm not as strong as I seem.
Okay, we'll give you a safe word. You can just say it if this is all too much.
Okay, yeah.
So just say papaya.
Okay,
beans. After hearing mention of it on your recent sitcoms episode, I recently decided to watch Josh.
Papaya. Is he going to take my performance to the clean? Come on, let's do it.
After being entertained a couple of times by appearances from Bean Mike Wozniak, whose performance was warm-hearted and believable.
Ah, fuck off.
Okay, go on.
Yeah, go on.
I was pleasantly surprised to see semi-decent cartoonist Henry Packer's face bob into view in Series 2. Having recently listened to your podcast, I began carefully analysing his lines to see if I could hear him saying anything particularly fast after he explained his astronomical struggle with the director's really quite simple performance direction on the podcast. So just if you've not listened to that one, Henry was given the instruction by the director to speed up with his lines, which he found challenging. Sam writes, alas, after his first scene, I was unable to hear any such thing. And as he left the frame, I was disappointed with his acceptable acting.
Oh.
Can you be disappointed in something acceptable? Would be my question.
But then he appeared again towards the end of the episode. And to my delight, I watched as he ordered a pint of lager with such immense haste.
Oh, really?
The words themselves were so fast, they could have been unrecognisable without the context clues of the pub setting.
Well,
gaps between the words were so non-existent, it seemed he'd created one new combined mulch word. The line tumbled out so fast, I chortled so loud. No person would speak like that in real life, and it completely unengaged me.
I think I'd say you got a huge compliment there, Henry.
Yeah, no, I'll take that.
You know.
But I think that was the issue, which is I went too fast in the end.
Well,
but that is, you know.
Well, here we go.
I was told to do that.
He writes, I've attached an audio file for curious listeners.
Can I get us a drink?
Yeah, pint of lager, please, love.
That is snappy, Henry.
That is snappy. Yeah. That's incredible. Let's hear that again.
Pint of lager, please, love.
Pint of lager,
please. I've taken all the syllables. I've taken all the consonants out of it. It's a pint of lager.
Yeah, pint of lager, please.
It's true that if you didn't have the context of the pub and the bar and the beer mats and the publican and you, if I was standing on for example a sort of desert dune,
yeah, they'd think so. You just said parallel.
He just said palala. He's trying to summon some sort of desert spirit. Palala, palala. If you put me in a Spanish setting, you'd be going, I think he's trying to order a paella, paella, yeah?
Well, you did it. You did it. You did it, Henry. Yeah. You took the note.
So thank you, Sam, for that email, who lives in Bremen, Buckinghamshire.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks to all our Patreon subscribers.
Indeed, thank you.
Thank you so much. We can't do this without you.
Another hugely sincere sounding.
I can't do it.
Thing is, you do mean it. That's the weird thing. It's like,
I know. I very much so. I can't sound genuine. It's a syndrome. Can I say just quickly, during that, I don't know what this means, but during that...
examination of your acting.
During that examination of acting, this is what I drew. I don't know if you can see it, but I was unconscious what I was drawing.
I don't have the vocabulary to describe that.
Yeah.
No.
Maybe we just have to put that on Twitter. But it's a figure in a lot of trouble, isn't it?
Yeah.
We can put that on social media for sure.
We'll put that on social media.
And, so go to Patreon if you're interested in getting bonus episodes. If you sign up, you get all of the ones we've done in the past. Which include ones themed around the Beatles and ABBA, but also all the ones in the future.
There's quite a few in the back catalogue now, aren't there?
Yeah, it's a good weekend's listening. And if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get access to the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike was last night.
I was, where there was a very exciting game of Naysball.
What's that?
It's a combination of basketball with a reenactment of the Battle of Naseby. And here's my report. It was the Sean Bean Summer Special at the Sean Bean Lounge last night. This year's special event, Naseball, combining a reenactment of the Battle of Naseby with basketball, the national sport of Serbia. Dougal Lott and Tim Corkhill were rubbed together to produce a thick Northamptonshire-style fog, through which Sandra Gross emerged with a parliamentarian crossover dribble only to be repelled by Dolly's Royal Dragoons, sponsored by Adidas. A cavalier rebound and tip-in from Cato would have conferred an advantage had he not been piked on the descent by Jerome Pettiprin, before being trebucheted into the opposing net by Hilary Lanner. Johnny Walter and Mike Field pulled off a two-man teardrop on horseback, which even caused the hillock-based battle-watching picnic club of Katrina Russo, John Smith and Trevor Coe to put down their taramasalata crackers and applaud. Kate Harrison drew criticism for smushing the blue-coat bombardiers of Nicholas Petrillic, Alex Thornhill and Chris Marshall with an arguably anachronistic solar-powered war crab. But that's Naseball, cried Tony Wu as he slam-dunked the funk and the ball and a 17th-century crossbow into a wet trench where Daniel Nixon, SP and H. Beans were blithely warming up their hamstrings. Dominic Pollard, Jack Murray Francis, Sam Van Leer and Joshua made history as the first people to be arrested for desertion from a battle that isn't actually happening and were given three laps. Meanwhile, Esther Smythe finger-rolled a pump-fake jab-step past the illegally actually loaded sawn-off musket of Catherine Jones before drawing contact sword-first with Will Thompson, who called time-out to look for his severed eyebrows. Penalty awarded to the Royalists, taken by Iris Steffensdottir from behind the 600-yard line using a 16-inch calibre culverin cannon. She didn't hit the net, but she did hit Tom Hall's second-hand inflatable bombardiers, enabling Teresa Kelly's heavy cavalry to overrun Sally Minone's Samurai Exchange student, clearing the way for Adam H's double-clutch layup, which was power-hooked off the royal backboard and through the hoop by Mark Evans, 1645 style. All hail the Lord Protector, Sean Bean.
Okay, well, that's the end of that episode and the end of our series. We will see you again in September.
Have a lovely, lovely summer, everybody.
Have a nice
time. Have a lovely time. And yeah, we'll be back when the leaves are turning a brown and a crispy.
Ah, it's Canadian Henry. Okay, we play out this episode, as we do with all episodes, with a version of our theme tune made by one of you, the listener. Thank you to everyone who sent them in. We haven't got through them all. We've got a few left that we'll store up for next season. So if you sent them in, don't worry, we will definitely play them out. For sure, we've just got a bit of a backlog. But also, don't let that stop you sending in new ones.
Yeah, we love them.
We love them all. This one's from Connor. We've had Connor on before.
Oh, really?
But he's a serial theme tune maker. And he contacted us on Patreon and asked me, does Mike have a favourite guitarist that he could ape?
Oh, really?
And I said that I thought you were a bit of a Clapton head.
I am a Clapton head.
So he's written, Dear Beans, this was originally intended to be a Clapton-esque theme for Mike.
Lovely.
But upon starting the writing process, I realised I had no fucking clue how to play like Eric. So I instead opted for a more general 70s rock-inspired track.
I'll take it.
It is not my intention to frustrate or annoy Henry by sending in guitar-based themes. However, if it has this result, I'll consider it a bonus. Best, Connor.
Yeah. Lovely, Connor. A smashing choice. He'd definitely be up there in my, you know, in my top tiers.
In your pantheon?
Yeah. Jimmy, of course, is up there. And I've recently been enjoying the work of French jazz guitarist Birelli Lagrène.
Oh, really? That's interesting. So is he a kind of Django Reinhardt sort of style guitarist?
Very much, yeah. Very much after Django Reinhardt.
I don't care about Django.
It's very much that South of
gypsy
France
jazz.
Kind of gypsy jazz manouche kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Talking about it.
Interesting
now.
Fellow, actually, because he started when he was a very young child. His father was a guitarist himself.
And he's off my ears.
And is he playing a kind of acoustic?
Usually acoustic. He will occasionally electric, but typically it's your classic sort of D-hold style, or, you know, your very much purpose-built gypsy jazz style guitar with a sort of high action and
re-hold my head.
Kind of twangy sound with a pick, but he's got versatility.
Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah,
brilliant.